You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the first time tonight, a special welcome. I'm glad you're here as well, and I hope you make a habit out of it. Come back each and every night. We'd love to have you. And because of the fact that we know that there are just boatloads of people who listen to the show for the very first time every night, we always try to remind you of a couple of things that are really cool and important. Now, the first thing that I want to remind you of, by the way, you can just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see both of these things. The first thing is UpSnap. Now, just scroll down the page and look over on the right-hand side. You'll see a little white button. It's small. You'll see it. And that is for UpSnap. Now, when you click that, it will take you to their website. And you can do something very, very important there. You can open a free account that will enable you to listen to this show via your cell phone. There are a number of people listening via cell phone now. And if it's not convenient for you to be at your computer at showtime, you can open up your cell phone and listen to the show. They charge nothing for that service. It's an excellent service. And we encourage you to go over there and avail yourself of that free service. It's UpSnap. Also, while you are at our website, while you're over on my website, kevinsmithshow.com, take advantage of our free weekly newsletter. It's called the K-Files E-Zine, and you'll find it in the menu over on the left side of the page, K-Files E-Zine. Just click on that, and you'll be able to subscribe free of charge. It's truly free of charge. There are no strings attached. And by the way, we never loan, rent, give, share, sell, or whatever else, our email list. You will not be spammed as a result of signing up for the Kevin Smith Show newsletter called the K-Files E-Zine. We keep those confidential. We don't share them with anybody. And so you can subscribe for free and with peace of mind knowing that there will be no spamming as a result of subscribing. All right? And again, it's absolutely free. We always put into the E-Zine a show update, and we always put a free download and then some articles that we think you'll be interested in. Got an email where someone said, love the show, but I wish you would update us about who your guests are by posting it on the website earlier in the day. Well, I will make this announcement because I think that must be a new listener. Can't do that because we have been under severe attack for quite some time. And when I announce who the guest is going to be and I post it on the website, people out there who have only one or two brain cells decide they're going to do a denial of service attack on us, and so we just can't do that. Sorry about that. Happens that you have to be careful in order to be free. We'll be back.
10, 9.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring 5 of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
And we're back on the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith. Now, he's been with us before, and each time he's been with us, it has been something very, very interesting and intellectually challenging. And I think it will be again tonight. He is the author of a book which I now hold in my hot little hands, called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. We talked about this once before, but now, having read this book 3 times, I've got more questions, and Jerry is back with us. Jerry, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, hi, Kevin. Good to be back with you. Gee, 3 times. I think that's about as many times as I've read it.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I really like about this book, about the way it's written, is that you've taken a really big, huge concept, and you've communicated it in a way that, what shall I say, layman can understand. You've communicated it in a way where anyone can understand what is being said. And
I work really hard at that. That's always always at the forefront of my mind as I'm writing any sentence, any paragraph, any scene, is will somebody who knows absolutely nothing about this subject be able to read this and it be clear and comprehensible to them?
Well, and you've accomplished that, and let me congratulate you on that. You really have. And one of the things that an example of what I'm talking about, very often we think of things in isolation. For instance, chemtrails. And we think of the chemtrail phenomena or mystery as being the chemtrail mystery. But it's related to other things, and you are able to show how it may be related to weather warfare. And you show that relationship in very understandable terms. Now, in your book, you really talk about more than the military plan to draft Mother Nature. You do talk about that, but you talk about more than that.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very big subject. And, you know, the title of the book, a book's title isn't really a description of the contents. It's really a plea. It's a cry from the bookshelf to grab a potential reader's attention. And so you want to get the nut, the core, the kernel of the subject in the title. But, of course, the tiny seed can grow up to be an immense tree. And that's kind of where we're at here. It's not just the weather. It's all environmental processes, including earthquakes and tsunamis, and it's not just the atmosphere. It's the ground we walk on and the space above the atmosphere and so forth. And it's not just the military. It's anybody who has an interest, a vested interest, a financial, political, or religious interest in manipulating natural forces.
And as an example of that, in your book on page 104, you reveal to us something called the Weather Modification Research and Technology Transfer Authorization of 2005. This is an act of Congress.
It failed. It did not get out of committee. It did not pass.
But
you're right. It would have been an act of Congress if it had been enacted.
Well, yeah. I call it that because that's in its title. It was intended to be an act.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that you have Kay Bailey Hutchison, a senator from Texas, not in the military. And this has nothing to do with the military plans, at least not overtly. But here you have, a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
But really pushing the idea of promoting weather modification.
Right. And this is because weather modification is real and ongoing in the U.S., even though the general public are blissfully unaware of it. It is a multi-million dollar operation with multi-billion dollar aspects. And Kay Bailey Hutchison really wanted to revive a previous act from, I think it was 1978. I've got a flip back here and take a look at it. But there was an act much earlier in the 70s in which Congress realized that weather modification was an ongoing activity, and that they felt, Congress felt, that it should have a have its finger in that pie. And Congress called for the creation of a weather modification advisory board to, and Congress ordered this, and Congress created this board and ordered the board to round up everything that was known about weather modification at that point in time and report back to Congress on what they found and what they think, where we thought we ought to go with this. And that board did, in fact, round up everything that's known. It is published in the Congressional Record. You can go down to your local U.S. government printing office and get a copy of it. The board recommended that that this was an ongoing activity that should have some congressional oversight, and should be more open to public input. And unfortunately, right about the same time, the United Nations passed a treaty prohibiting the use of the weather or other environmental processes as an act of war. This is the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques.
All right, now let me just break in right there and ask a question. Aside from possible military uses, because I think all of us can understand that if you could make it rain on your enemy nonstop, torrential rain on your enemy for 2 or 3 months, you know, you'd have your enemy bogged down.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the troops' morale would be shot.
Yeah. But aside from the military use of weather modification, what are the perceived benefits or the perceived values that we would get out of pursuing that science of weather modification?
Well, okay. I kind of wanted to make a point back there, but I guess we'll come back around to it. One of the to answer your question, let me give you a couple of pieces of data. Business Week magazine in 2005 reported that China, the Chinese government, was spending upwards of $40 million a year and had 35,000 people employed full-time in weather management. And here we define weather management as cloud seeding to tease more precipitation out of storms so as to relieve droughts, fog dispersal from airports, and hail suppression so that hail does not fall and destroy crops. Now, I want to give you a quote from a top U.S. scientist, Dr. Gordon J.F. McDonald. Dr. McDonald was the associate director of the Institute of Geophysics and Planetary Physics at UCLA. He was also on a couple of White House advisory panels. He was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and a member of the JASON Group, which is a military think tank at the very top of the military-industrial academic pyramid. He wrote extensively about future weapon systems because he helped to decide what future weapon systems were going to be designed. And speaking of the future, he said, technology will make available to the leaders of the major nations a variety of techniques for conducting secret warfare. Techniques of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm, thereby weakening a nation's capacity and forcing it to accept the demands of the competitor. Now think for a moment about North Korea. North Korea is downwind of China. North Korea has been in a drought for a decade. China has been stealing Korea's rain for a decade. And this has forced the Koreans to be China's lapdog and to buy Chinese food. I wonder if it comes in those little white boxes.
Okay, now let's back up and just for a second and focus on what you just said. When you say that China has been stealing North Korea's rain, Do you mean literally they've been taking that rain and using it in China, or they've been preventing the rain from falling in North Korea?
Both. This is a debate that has existed since the very beginning of weather modification. And weather modification began in the 1890s. And starting with suits in the 1890s, the United States courts have been asked to rule on, if I make it rain where I am and you live downwind of me, have I stolen your, and it doesn't rain where you are and it does rain where I am because I used artificial rainmaking technology, have I stolen your rain? Have I stolen your water? And do you have standing? Do you have rights? Can you sue me for having stolen your water? And the United States courts have had these problems, have had these cases for 130 years. And the United States court system has yet to rule on this because when they bring in expert testimony says yes and no, and the courts can't decide.
What would happen, using North Korea, since you brought it up, what would happen if North Korea had weather modification technology and they turned it on to counter what the Chinese were doing?
Well, it may not accomplish much. Keep in mind that the flow of the atmosphere, the direction that the atmosphere travels. Korea is in a position relative to China in much the same position that, say, Maine is relative to Pennsylvania. And we see that the storms go west to east. Occasionally we get a nor'easter, but most of the weather moves west to east, and so Pennsylvania could steal Maine weather, but not so much the other way around. And that's the same problem that North Korea has vis-a-vis China, mm-hmm. is that they can't make the atmosphere spin backwards. So there's not a whole lot they can do with the upwinders, North Korea being downwind of China.
Yeah, I can see that you'd have some geographical factors in there.
Now there are some variations on the theme. Let me give you another example of a possible rain theft. There is a Russian company that was a bureau, a branch of the Russian of the Soviet government, and when the Soviet Union broke up, they became a private company named Elate Technologies. Elate Technologies is using an exotic form of artificial rainmaking that the Department of Defense played with in the 1950s and then abandoned. And this is using ground-based platforms to ionize or deionize the atmosphere above them. They are doing this in northern Mexico. Northern Mexico had been in a drought for most of the last decade, and today the drought is gone. 5 years ago, most of northern Mexico's reservoirs were at about 20% of capacity. Today, most of northern Mexico's reservoirs are at 80 to 85% of capacity because of using the late technologies technology. Well, what's happening is that the moisture that's moving north from tropical Mexico into temperate America is being stopped on that side of the Rio Grande. And today, Texans are screaming because the Mexicans are stealing Texan rain.
Well, I would suppose they're stealing Arizona rain then as well, but I don't know how we would ever know it.
Exactly. That's one of the big problems that the U.S. courts were unable to distinguish, is that while it is theoretically possible that this might be happening, to actually physically quantify it is something else again. We can say, well, you may well be stealing their rain, but how much of their rain did you actually steal? That is a question that has yet to be resolved, because this technology is still, you know, in the developmental stage. It's still on the iffy side. They haven't got it to an exact science yet.
playing God with the weather is a little bit sticky, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And again, that whole argument of whether or not this is something that God would object to goes back to the very beginning of the rainmaking days. When the very first rainmakers appeared on the scene, there were angry mobs saying, "You are meddling with God's domain, and ill will come of it."
Now, back to the Kay Bailey Hutchison thing. You know, what I wonder, I mean, I can see all kinds of benefits militarily to being able to modify the weather. I can see all kinds of possibilities there militarily.
Right.
But then when you have Kay Bailey Hutchison getting into it, that's a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that civilians think would be a good thing about modifying the weather?
Well, the big thing, let me give you two words. Hurricane Andrew.
Uh-huh.
It's very clear that when a storm like Hurricane Andrew or Hurricane Katrina does $1 billion in damage, it gets a lot of people's attention. And if we could somehow stop that from happening, that might be a good thing.
Yeah.
And so that's where the civilian angle is. There's a whole lot of insurance companies and beachfront properties that would like to be able to steer hurricanes.
Okay, fair enough. But there seems to be little support for that.
Well, again, we have there's the scientific infrastructure, and then there is. I won't go so far as to say that there's a conspiracy, but there is something going on, and this is the point I was making about that something going on, is that the U.S. used weather modification techniques during the Vietnam War. Operation Popeye went on for 8 years, and Operation Popeye was an attempt to extend the monsoon season by cloud seeding over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was the Viet Cong resupply route. And it came out in Jack Anderson's column, I think it was in 72, that this had been ongoing.
Okay, Jerry, we'll have to come back to that. We are into a hard break, ladies and gentlemen. Jerry E. Smith, we're talking about his book called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And we'll be back. We'll be right back. We are back on the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith, and we're talking about his book called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. Jerry, you were cut off unceremoniously, and I apologize for that, but those are hard breaks, and they just happen.
Yeah.
So, but go, continue.
Okay, what I was trying to do was establish the historical context to, so we can understand what Kay Bailey Hutchinson was trying to accomplish with that act. And the historical context is that it also reveals the dark side of military manipulation of this technology and our culture and our government. In that, as I said, the military did use weather modification techniques during World War, during the Gulf. During the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
This was Operation Popeye. It came out about 1972 in Jack Anderson's column. Senator Claiborne Pell, Democrat, Rhode Island, was shocked to hear about this and called in the then Secretary of Defense, Melvin Laird, and grilled him about it. And Laird responded, no, we're not doing that. That's just nonsense. Well, 2 years later, a private letter from Laird got leaked to the press, and this letter admitted that Laird had lied to Congress and that, in fact, they had been using weather modification techniques over the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And Pell reconvened his investigation. By this time, Laird was no longer Secretary of Defense. He'd become personal counsel to Richard Nixon, who was fighting for his political life in the aftermath of Watergate. But Pell did get a couple of spokes droids from the Pentagon to troop over to Capitol Hill, and they revealed that Operation Popeye was intended to extend the monsoon season with hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into a hopeless quagmire of mud. And they had it had been ongoing for 8 years. They had expended 47,000 units of cloud seeding material over four countries, North and South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, in violation of international law, and had spent $21.6 million on the project. Pell was appalled at this and wanted to know what else they were up to, and discovered the DOD, Department of Defense, was involved in a wide spectrum of investigations into how to manipulate the environment, such things as intentional melting of Arctic ice and intentional thinning out of the ozone layer over an enemy population so as to sicken the enemy through increased exposure to solar radiation. Pell then led the charge that resulted in the UN treaty I mentioned earlier, the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques, also known as the ENMOD Treaty. And the complete text of the ENMOD Treaty is in the book, Weather Warfare. What this did, up to that point in time, there had been, as I said, there had been a U.S. act that had created a Weather Modification Advisory Board, and the Weather Modification Advisory Board had been advising Congress on what the state of the art on weather modification was, and the federal government was spending in excess of $30 million a year and had over 700 degreed scientists working on environmental modification technologies. And then after the U.S. signed this treaty, the federal budget went to zero and all these jobs went away and it all just disappeared, and the Weather Advisory Board was discontinued and it all went dark. I maintain that Uncle Sam did not say, oh well, can't do that anymore, but in fact it took it all to covert ops, took it all to black projects.
Okay, and now let me ask a question at this
30
point.
30 years ago, and it's been black ops for 30 years, and Kay Bailey Hutchinson was trying to shine some light on the black ops and bring this technology out of military closets and back into civilian hands where we could do something positive with it.
All right, now, the United States is a signatory to this UN convention, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that means we agree that that's a bad thing to do, and we're not going to do it. We're not going to monkey around with Mother Nature.
Yeah, that's a yes. In a nutshell, yes, except that that's not really it, but go on.
Well, I mean, that is what the convention is.
But now again, the treaty is a hopelessly flawed treaty, and I do a substantial analysis of the treaty's faults and problems, and it has no teeth, and it has a threshold that in order to be considered to be in violation of this treaty, the threshold is so high it's almost impossible to violate the treaty, because in order for something to be a violation, it has to be long-term or widespread or there's a third one which I've gone blank on because I haven't thought about the treaty for 6 months.
But the point is that we agreed it's a bad thing and we're going to stop. Okay. Now, after that, you say you believe that the technology did not stop, and the technology was taken into covert operation, or into, as we would say, black ops.
That was one angle of it, and the other angle is it went civilian. Is that civilian contractors? Uncle Sam has been using civilian contractors since the Vietnam War because they realized that privately owned companies don't have to tell Congress diddly. They don't have to reveal what they're doing. They don't have the Congress doesn't have the oversight over civilian operations. So anything that Uncle Sam doesn't want to get caught with his fingers in, he hires somebody to stick their fingers in it. A classic example of this is one of the world's largest weather modification companies is Weather Modification Incorporated out of Fargo, North Dakota. And last year, one of the lead scientists for Weather Modification Incorporated went on Art Bell's show and outed himself as one of the lead scientists on Operation Popeye.
Well, now, let's back up to Popeye and talk about that for a moment. What's so bad about raining your enemy to death? I mean, on the one hand, you drop bombs and you rain fire from above on them. On the other hand, you rain water on them. And well, water would seem to be somewhat less cruel and less destructive.
You're right. It's a much more kinder, gentler warfare. The problem is once you put your foot in that door, once you say, well, if we can make it rain on them, why can't we make it earthquake under them? Why can't we make a tsunami bomb? And in fact, we recently discovered recently declassified military documents from New Zealand revealed that the New Zealanders actually did succeed in making a tsunami bomb at the end of World War II. It's just that they didn't perfect the bomb until after the war's end, and so they never got a chance to use it. But that's the sort of horror we can be dealing with. And as Pell put it, what makes us feel so secure today, because we have it and nobody else does, will make us feel terribly insecure next year when everybody else gets it. You know, you look at the bomb. When we were the only atomic power, we were the big and safe and bad, and everybody felt, my God, we're it. And then the Russians got it, and then the Chinese got it, and then, oh my God, the French got it. And suddenly we didn't feel so safe anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, it is a fact that whatever it is we get, everyone else gets it eventually.
Yes, if they don't figure it out on their own right, they just steal it from us.
Yeah, but, you know, there are plenty of disloyal Americans willing to give it away, too. Unfortunately.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that military secrets are only temporarily military secrets,
mm-hmm.
And military technology is only military only for a while, and eventually it ends up in civilian hands. And we have, you know, the amazing thing is that the very first patent for artificial weather was granted to United States General. The U.S. military had been involved in this since 1880.
How was he modifying the weather? By what technology?
This was General Rutledge, who during the Civil War was a Confederate general who led an artillery battalion. And he noted that after that great battles were often followed by great rainstorms. And because he was an artillery general, he came up with the theory of the concussion theory of rainmaking, in that he believed that the concussions, the explosions, the pressure changes from the explosions caused the rainstorms. We now know that it was probably smoke and dust forming nucleating particles that allowed for rainstorms.
Yeah, it was sort of like seeding the clouds from below.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so General Rutledge got the very first patent in 1880 for making artificial rain using the concussion method. And the United States federal government, by this time he's become a Union general, and the U.S. government spent $20,000 on experiments to prove whether it worked or not. And in 1880, $20,000 is a heck of a lot of money, about the same as $250,000 today.
Yeah.
And a contingent from the Department of the Interior went to the Staked Plains of Texas, which today we know as New Mexico, and simulated battles and actually succeeded in getting rain. And proved that there was a possibility for this technology. And in the 1890s, there was a drought across the western plains, Kansas and so forth, and the rainmaker appeared. And a number of people tried a number of theories, and many were successful.
Okay, so whenever we talk about modifying the weather, it's not all negative and dark and sinister. There could be some good uses for that. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that. There are problems with it. The problems being that there is, again, as we mentioned, there is the religious angle of will this offend God or the gods. Mm-hmm. There is the political angle of if I make it rain here and it doesn't rain over there, have I in any way injured over there? There's also the question, if I make it rain here and I make it rain too much, have I do those people who get washed away in the flood, do they have standing against me? And how do we prove how much I actually made it rain? I mean, maybe it would have flooded anyhow. That's one of the set of problems. Another, this has been an ongoing debate, argument for, as I said, 130 years as to the downsides versus the plus sides. You know, how do you measure the rights of people who like sunny days versus the rights of people who want to grow their crops? And we have, as I mentioned, steering hurricanes. A lot of people would think, oh, we could steer hurricanes, we could just keep them out to sea and they never come to land, never do any damage, yada, yada. But these people do not understand how ecosystems work, and that coastal waterways need to be flushed out by storm surge. And if we keep all the storms away, all our coastal waterways will turn into stinking, fetid swamps.
Okay, we are into another break, and we will continue with Jerry Smith on this very fascinating subject of weather modification, weather warfare, when we come back from this break. See you on the other side.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
with my hand. Well, I can feel the heat reminding me where I am. I told her I'd wait here till she returned. I never knew how long that would be. You live and learn. I'm doing time in Texas. No prison walls and signs. Spaces, and still I'm trapped inside. The minutes feel like days into this weary man. I'm only heartbroken, restless. Tell me, where's the justice? Doing time in Texas. She said it's no one's fault. Your dreams aren't the same as mine. Myself, I just need a little time. The girl I knew has never been west of El Paso. I hear she's in L.A. now, and I'm all alone, alone in San Antonio. I'm doing time in Texas, no prison walls in sight. Spaces, and still I'm trapped inside. The minutes feel like days to this weary man. I'm lonely, heartbroken, restless. Tell me, where's the justice? Doing time in Texas. Now I haven't convinced myself that she's really gone. Until I do, there's no way to escape from this place that was once our home. I'm doing time in Texas. No prison walls in sight. Only wide open spaces. And still I'm trapped inside.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Jerry E. Smith, the author of a book entitled Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. Jerry, once again, we had to cut you off, and I'd like to invite you to pick up where you were and continue.
Well, you and I were both working on making a point about unintended consequences, the unexpected outcomes of these experiments. Let me give you one of my favorite examples. There was once upon a time a technology developed that today we can't imagine living without, and I'm talking about indoor plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now I'm holding a piece of indoor plumbing. It's hard to imagine life in the civilized world without it. And yet, when it was invented a couple of thousand years ago, they didn't understand the relationship between lead and health, and they made plumbing out of lead. In fact, the word plumb comes from the Latin word for lead. And so lead pipes led to, if you excuse the expression, lead poisoning, which drove the Roman intelligentsia mad, and they had no idea what was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it took a couple of thousand years to get the bugs out of that technology. Now, here we have, in our society today, we launch new technologies daily. And many of these new technologies take a long time to discover the downside, like Vioxx. or thalidomide. You know, we launch these things and then start, and then the bodies start dropping.
Yeah.
Now with something like the weather, with something like environmental processes that could produce earthquakes or tidal waves, volcanic eruptions, or other big events, they're doing these technologies in open air testing. They're not doing it in the lab. They're doing it in the air over our heads. And this this is one of these things where I don't want to find out the hard way that this technology could kill us all.
Well, look, on the one hand, you would have people who would say that, in order to kill us all, it would take something far more powerful than what we're doing. But on the other hand, you know, once you put Mother Nature out of balance, it may be millennia before it rebalances.
Right. The global warming people are saying right now that if we have zero emissions tomorrow, we're still going to lose New York City to rising seawater.
Yeah, I've heard that. Frankly, I don't think we're going to lose New York City to rising seawater. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I will say that when you put Mother Nature out of balance by whatever means, she does not long stay out of balance. She tries to balance herself immediately. But it may take millennia for it to complete. Now, an example. Back in the 1970s when I was in college, one of my favorite classes was environmental biology. And the professor was talking then about the consequences that we would face if they continued to clear-cut and burn the Amazon rainforest. And that was back in the 70s.
Yep.
Well, now we know, and he was talking about the climate changes that would take place in America as a result of that activity in South America. Well, now we see it. And the thing is that you put Mother Nature out of balance there, and she tries to regain balance by doing something elsewhere, and the results are negative.
That I have no disagreement with that whatsoever. One of the points I made in my first book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, which was a book about HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which is a program that I cover at quite a bit of length in Weather Warfare, giving an update of where the HARP project is at. I point out that HARP is about modifying the atmosphere, and that this means that we are all unwilling participants or unwitting participants in this project, because we are in the atmosphere that is being modified by this experiment. And I point out that this is a violation of the Nuremberg Code. After World War II, the War Tribunal in Nuremberg concluded that in order for humans to be subjected to scientific experiments, they had to have informed consent. They had to be informed of all the aspects of that experiment and give their consent to participate in it. And I assure you, I did not get the memo about HARP, nor did I sign off on being allowing myself to be a guinea pig for it, nor did anybody else in North America.
I hear you. I also hear music playing in the background, and I have no idea why. That's kind of frightening.
Well, it's not at my end. All I have here is a ticking clock and a refrigerator.
I don't know why, but there it was. Anyway, it's not time for that music yet. HARP is something that has a lot of people stirred up and probably always will. Those who are for it, and I have talked to scientists who have worked on that. I've talked to them right here on this show. And they say that it's impossible that it has been weaponized, but it, you know, it's plausible, possible, if you will, that it could be, but not possible that it has been weaponized. And they say that it's all, you know, pure science, and it's good, and it's and it's healthy. There are other people who say that HAARP is potentially one of the most dangerous devices ever built, and because it has the capability of actually blowing away the ionosphere. What's your take on it? And we've only got a couple of minutes here before we have our top of the hour break, but what's your take on HAARP? Good, bad, ugly, indifferent, what?
HAARP is a couple of things. One, it is the transition point between research and application. From the beginning, it was recognized that after 30 years of research into dynamics of the upper atmosphere, they realized that there were some things they could do with it. And HAARP is all about doing things with the upper atmosphere. And if you read DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency's statement of what they've done with HAARP, it's quite clear. They have used it to communicate with deeply submerged submarines. They have used it to create optical and infrared emissions in space to calibrate space sensors. They have used it to reshape the atmosphere so as to create waveguides or wave ducts so as to make more secure communications. This is called atmospheric modification. And it is just one piece of an ensemble of technologies. You know, you look at the orchestra. Well, it's the snare drum.
Yeah,
you know, there's a whole lot of other pieces out there.
So, do you say it's good or bad?
Yes.
diplomatic. It's both. Folks, we have we're right up into a break. We've got about 4 seconds here until it starts. When we come back on the other side of this break, you know what we're going to do, I guess. What we're going to do is we are going to open up the telephone lines and allow you to call in and allow you to ask your questions or make your comments. You ask your questions of Jerry Smith or make your comments to Jerry Smith. Weather modification, it's not a theory. It's apparently happening. And the question is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do you think it's the right thing for us to be doing? Or do you think it's dangerous? And if so, why? Our telephone number is toll-free throughout North America. That's the United States and Canada. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. Toll free. I pay for the call. Things can't get any better than that. We'll be back right after this. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring 5 of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. Let me welcome those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and I hope you can work your schedule out where you can join us in the first hour each and every night. But thanks for being here. We're glad that you are. My guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith, and we are discussing his book entitled Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And we're talking about weather modification and its various potential uses. It has, according to Jerry, been used as a weapon in Vietnam, and perhaps there are devices now that can weaponize the weather. Jerry, we have a caller already holding on the line, so if you don't mind, I think what we'll do is go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Yes, Michelle.
Yeah, I got a question for Jay.
Go ahead.
How many countries got this technology?
Boy, that's a hard question. Cloud seeding has been around since the middle of the last century. So pieces of this technology are very common. On the other hand, some of the more advanced pieces are just in a few hands. So it depends entirely on which technology you're talking about.
Well, like you said, China was stealing the rain from Korea.
Righto. As I said, Business Week magazine reported that China is spending $40 million a year and has 35,000 people employed full-time, mostly in doing fog dispersal from airports, which actually predates cloud seeding, and variations on cloud seeding. And cloud seeding has two major uses. One is to tease more precipitation out of storms, and the other is to seed the clouds before they produce hail so that they rain rather than hail. So this is called hail suppression, so that the hail doesn't fall and destroy crops. And this is a major technology that is in daily use around the planet. I mentioned Weather Modification Incorporated is just one of many private companies in the U.S. doing this, and they have clients across the world, from farmers in Nebraska to ski resorts in Colorado to Argentina.
Okay, Michelle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, part of it. Can I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Jerry, do you think there's any chance whatsoever that the trouble we're having with bees could be something to do with this new technology?
It's quite possible. We don't really know what's getting the bees. A British scientific investigation of this, which is coming out in the next issue of World Explorer magazine, which is published by Adventures Unlimited Press, which will be hitting the stands in a few weeks, has an article that British researchers discovered that bees won't go anywhere near cell phones, and that if you put a cell phone next to a hive, you lose the hive. And as you know, we live in a technology-rich society that more and more cell towers are going up constantly. And the East Coast area that is losing the bees is one of the most densely populated with cell towers and cell technology. Then I've heard other rumors, which I'd like to get more data on. I live in the Farm Belt here in central Illinois at the moment, and I've heard farmers talking to each other, and they're convinced that it is GM, genetically modified crops, and that there are some crops, you know, that have been developed to produce their own pesticide. And they're saying to each other that they can see that they're not getting the the self-pesticiding plants are not getting pollinated because the bees won't go anywhere near them. So this is another possibility.
All right, Michelle, thank you so much for the call. Very interesting. Let me encourage everyone to pick up the phone and do that magic thing you do, 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. Toll free all across North America, from the very tip-top of Canada to the very bottom tip of the United States of America, it's toll free. What would be the bottom tip? That'd be Florida, huh?
I'm not looking at a map at the moment. Either Florida, Brownsville, you know, Key West, or Brownsville. There's a couple of those are as far south as I can think of.
Yeah. It's got to either be the tip of Texas or the tip of Florida, and I think it's going to be Florida.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's toll free, and we'd love to hear from you. If you live outside of our toll-free area, that would be outside of North America, then you can send me a Flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. It's just an email, flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and I check that during the show. Now, if you're inside of North America and you use that, I will not read your message on the air because I've provided a toll-free number for you. But if you're outside of North America, I will read your message on the air and will do so gladly. One of the things that I had to chuckle at when I read your book, you probably did not think you were writing any comedy.
There's a number of intentional jokes in there.
Well, this one has to do with a name that everyone... I hate to say it, but generations younger than I are blissfully unaware of the most important names in history very often. Not always, but very often. But this is a name that lots and lots of people know about, Edward Teller.
Mm-hmm.
And you call him Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw that, I said, oh, my gosh. Well, let's see what he's got to say about Teller. And he was strange, actually.
And a large number of people, many thousands of people, believe that Teller was indeed the model for the character of Dr. Strangelove from the movie Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
That is true. But what role does he play in weather modification?
He was the associate director of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And Lawrence Livermore has spent a couple hundred million dollars and a couple of decades looking into global warming and from the point of view of mitigation, not how to reduce it, but how to balance out the effects. Mm-hmm. And they have come up with a number of mitigation schemes. And Dr. Teller, as the point man for his lab, promoted these schemes at a number of international symposia over the years, particularly one in, I think it was France, where they suggested chemtrails. They suggested putting up a sunscreen for the Earth, as Teller called it. And not only did he present this to scientists, but he then wrote an article on it for the Wall Street Journal. And the concept is really quite simple. And it goes back to famed physicist Freeman Dyson, who suggested in 1979 that if global warming really were real and caused by greenhouse gases, then it would be fairly easy to balance out the effect, in that the idea of greenhouse gases causing global warming, the theory is that these gases like CO2, go to the top of the atmosphere and work like the panes of glass in a greenhouse and allow solar energy, solar heat to come in, but then prevent it from going back out, trapping the heat in and making the earth hotter like a greenhouse. And there's a cool word here, albedo. The Earth's albedo is the measure of how much solar radiation, so much sunlight, the Earth bounces back into space. And Dyson's idea was really very simple. If you increase the Earth's albedo, if you make the Earth shinier, less sunlight will get in, less heat will get in, and so you can balance out. And so there's now all this, many scientific papers about radiative forcing and radiative balance that is all about this subject. And a number of scientific organizations have looked at ways to increase the Earth's albedo as a way to mitigate global warming. And a number of schemes have been brought forward. One that I thought was absolutely hilarious, and this was also from Lawrence Livermore National Labs, they presented this as a possibility to the President of the United States in a closed-door meeting in the White House a couple of years ago, in which they suggested building a fleet of thousands of robot sailboats. And these robot sailboats would be solar powered, and they would have solar powered fog generators on them, and they would sail back and forth outside of the normal shipping lanes, generating vast fog banks, turning the Earth's oceans into reflective blankets so as to radiate more energy back into space. Primary thing that he promoted, the sunscreen that he thought would be the thing to do, would be to inject shiny dust particles, particularly aluminum and barium, high in the atmosphere, so as to increase Earth's albedo. And he thought that by increasing the Earth's albedo by only 1 or 2% would balance out the effects of global warming. Well, this quite literally is chemtrails. It's the idea of injecting these chemicals high into the atmosphere. And if you listen to the military, they will tell you there's aluminum and barium are completely harmless when injected into the atmosphere. Any reputable biologist or doctor will tell you hogwash, that these chemicals are incredibly dangerous and very harmful and do a variety of nasty things when they get inside humans.
Let's go to the phone line. We have someone holding. And caller, if you will, your first name and where are you calling from?
My name is Bill. I'm calling from Elgin, Illinois.
Yes, Bill.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Jerry, I have a question for you. What do you think is the worst case scenario? What is your biggest fear? Since we're fooling with Mother Nature and she has the tendency to fight back, if they just do the wrong thing, what do you really feel is your biggest fear, worst case scenario with people playing with nature like this?
Boy, there's a lot of them. With HARP, probably the worst case scenario, since HARP is designed to modify the Earth's magnetic field, causing a pole shift or a magnetic reversal or magnetic field collapse, that would pretty much fry out the entire surface of the Earth. That's pretty worst case. With weather, it's not. I don't see anything quite so serious, but what we're seeing is, if you look at mitigation schemes, there's recently been discovered global dimming, and nobody knows what global dimming is or what it's caused by, but we do know that the Earth is receiving less solar energy now than it did 10 years ago, that the amount of solar energy per square inch on the Earth's surface is down, and the Earth's skies seem to be getting dimmer. And it could be because of some covert spraying program. It could be because the nature of the sun has changed. It could be because of these greenhouse gases or something else that we haven't even figured out yet. But we know that any of these sort of broad disruptions cause chain events, cause cascade effects. Reno right now from the amount of warming seen over North America that dozens of species had been affected. For example, the sugar maple. One of the things that we discovered about persistent contrails, and persistent contrails is an essential part of the of not just the chemtrail debate, but also the global warming debate. Persistent contrails hold in the heat at night and prevent the heat from getting in during the day. They balance out. They reduce the difference between day and night temperatures. And this was discovered during the 3 days of no-fly after the September 11th disaster. And it's now clear that because of persistent contrails, there's less sugar being produced by sugar maples, because the sugar maples need to have a cold nights and warm days, and we're getting warm nights and cool days, and it just isn't as much fun for the sugar maples anymore.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you. Great show tonight, guys.
All right, thanks, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let me remind all of you of our telephone number, the telephone number toll-free, 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. I pay for the telephone call, all right? Looking into the future, the Air Force has done some of that. The Air Force says that they want to be able basically to control the weather by 2025. Isn't that correct?
Yes and no. Yes and no.
Okay.
Officially, the Brigadier General in charge of weather related operations for the U.S. Air Force has repeatedly stated that the Air Force does not want to control the weather. However, the Air Force has spent millions on modifying the atmosphere, such as through Project HARP. So there's a certain degree of disingenuity in his statements. And what you're referring to is a series of white papers that were studies done by the U.S. Air Force Air College. And this has happened a couple of times. The Air College, about once a decade, tasks the students and professors at the Air College to look into the future and figure out what it would take for the U.S. to be the dominant air and space power in the future. The first one of these was called SpaceCast 2020, and the most recent one was Air Force 2025. And Air Force 2025 is some 41 of these research papers. Collectively, there are about 3,700 pages, and one of the papers is called Weather as a Force Multiplier, Owning the Weather in 2025. Now, remember, I talked about this UN treaty that prevents the military from using weather as a weapon. But again, there is this threshold where it has to be widespread, severe, or long-lasting. And if it doesn't meet the threshold, then they figure they can do it. So Air Force 2025 is all about what they figure they can do without violating the letter of that treaty, but just stomping all over the spirit of it. And this involves such things as actually there's a list of them from the paper that I have in the book, and this list lays out such things as enhance our operations, degrade their operations. As you mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you could just make it rain on the enemy for a month, that would degrade their operations. If you need to have clear skies in order to run your bomber sorties, well, if you can make the skies clear, you can hit your targets better. On the other hand, if you're trying to move troops and you don't want the enemy to see the troops, if you could make clouds over their heads, they could march or sail in hidden under them.
One of the things that I found interesting about this paper that you're mentioning here The people who prepared this are fairly high-ranking people.
Yeah, a couple of brigadier generals.
Well, and you got a couple of colonels, lieutenant colonels, majors.
Yeah.
These are not students just being speculative. These are ranking officers.
Right.
And
right.
Looking at real applications for weather modification. Let's
right.
go to.
As I pointed out, it's not policy, but it is provided to the policymakers so as to build policy on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yeah, Brent.
I have a question about oxygen. Every time we send a jet up, every time we drive a car, every time we burn a fossil fuel, we burn more oxygen than fuel. What effect is that having on the weather? And yeah, just essentially, what kind of effect is that having on the weather?
You know, I wish I knew the answer to that question. That's a little outside of my research zone. It was an area I meant to get to, but the book is 400 pages long. It took me 7 years to research, and I'm sorry I missed a few things.
Okay, Brent, does that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, thank you. 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092, toll free. Weather modification is something that I think a lot of people, honestly, have thought, well, that's science fiction. It isn't. It is science. It is
exactly. In fact, one of the points I've been trying to make as we're talking about K. Bailey Hutchinson and so forth, is that that bill never made it out of committee. I believe because there is still a reluctance on the part of the military who got their fingers caught in the cookie jar in Vietnam to own up to what's really going on and to let the rest of the cats out of this bag. And the military have an aggressive program of altering our thinking. You mentioned research papers. One is a non-lethal research. I can't remember the exact title of it now. Unconventional weapons in conflict short of war, I think is the title, from the Army equivalent of the Air College. And they look at all these exotic weapons, all these non-conventional weapons that are coming down the pike, and they realized, the authors of this paper realized that there was a problem, that these things, many of these things were contrary to the American spirit, that they're the sort of thing that the American people would not allow the military to do. And the writers come to the rather shocking conclusion that they don't say, oh, well, we can't do it because it's un-American. They say, how can we redesign America to get Americans to let us do it? An example of this redesigning is the movie Independence Day, ID4.
All right, we'll continue when we come back after these messages. And we'll continue talking about how do you redefine America? How do you go about it? We'll be back. Don't go away.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jerry E. Smith, author of an excellent book called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. Jerry, we were talking about how the military were writing about the necessity for changing America so that we would accept some of what they're doing. We have a caller on the line. Let's take the call, and then we'll get back to that discussion. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from? Ah, I see. Must be someone new who doesn't know. The way you can tell that you your call has been answered and you made it is your telephone stops ringing. Big clue. Big clue. That's how you know you're on hold.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about it.
Okay. The point I was making is that the Air Force has a problem with Area 51. The Air Force doesn't want to admit that it exists. They don't want the general public thinking that it exists. And the cat's kind of out of that bag, so they came up with an interesting way to make people stop thinking about it, which is there was a sci-fi movie called Independence Day, and it's set mostly at Area 51. So the Air Force dumped $2 million into the film's production. Now, you could think, well, you know, they did that because it's there's pilots and fighter planes, and it's a recruiting film to get guys to want to become an Air Force fighter pilot. No, Will Smith's character is a Marine fighter pilot. Why would the Air Force be recruiting for the Marines? No, they wanted to make it so that whenever somebody talked about Area 51, whoever they were talking about it to went, oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that in a sci-fi film. That's not real, is it?
Yeah, do you really think that's going to work?
I think it has worked at some length. Many things, like HAARP, have been entered into sci-fi films. I've seen at least one sci-fi TV show and one sci-fi movie about HAARP. The TV show was 7 Days, and the movie was The Core.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Kevin, this is Dave. I'm calling from Fuquay, Varina, North Carolina.
Outstanding. Dave, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Listen, you have some very intelligent listeners, and I love Michelle and the questions he asks because I think I'm zoning in and thinking the same kind of things that he says. You know, when he brought up the question about the bees.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal, and I think a lot of people are not realizing how big of a deal it is that bees are, like, disappearing. And what I'm wondering is, with this experimenting and things that the government's been doing with the weather and HAARP and different things like that, are we, like, killing off our, you know, our basic resources that basically keep the civilization going and stuff like that is what I'm wondering, you know.
Absolutely. Albert Einstein once commented that if the bees were to disappear, humanity would be dead within 4 years.
I know. It's happening right now.
Yes, we are the bees are not the only canary in our collective mine. We've been seeing frogs die off and frog mutations for decades, and we know it's a sign of something wrong in the environment, but we still haven't figured out what. In my first book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, I suggest that the problem could be electromagnetic radiation, that we live in this soup of EMR that gets thicker every day, and like the Romans who developed indoor plumbing and didn't realize the problem with lead, we are unleashing on the world EMR without having a clue what's going to happen.
Right. And I have a real interesting situation, too, because I have an uncle that works with the HARP Project, and he told me all this is like it's for the good of the country and everything else, but I'm just not buying it, and it's really rough for me because, you know, he's part of the family and everything, and I'm not biting it.
Right. You know, I firmly believe that virtually everybody on the project is convinced they're doing a good thing. But you know, this is there's a word for this. It's called compartmentalization. Right. Everybody who's working on the project knows their part of the project, and their part of the project is completely above boards. But they don't know how the pieces link together and what the ultimate is.
I've worked on government projects in the past, consulting and stuff, and that's exactly what they did with us. It's like we knew what we had to know to do our little part, but we didn't know anything else, and everybody else knew their parts, and you know, so. It was just, unless you could connect those parts, you didn't really know what the heck you were working on.
Exactly. There were over a million people working on some aspect of the Manhattan Project, yet there was only about 2,000 people who actually knew they were building a bomb.
Right. Well, wonderful. This is a great show, Kevin, and I really love your guests, so I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and right. You bring up some interesting points. All right, folks, 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout North America. Or if you live outside of North America, you can send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. I look at flash messages during the show. It's the only email I look at during the show, and they must come from outside of North America. If they come from inside of North America, they do not get read. All right? You know, it is true because I've interviewed several people who have worked on several projects, HARP included, and you know, they are convinced of the goodness of what they are doing, and you know, they're not evil people, they're not sinister. And they're convinced that what they're doing is good, and it may be. But there may be some side effects that are not good. Let's go back to the phone line and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Bill from Elgin, Illinois.
Yes, Bill.
I'm listening on 16:10 a.m.
Good.
The station that carries you out here.
Good. Outstanding.
I had a question for the guest there. I don't know if this has come up and I missed it, but does anyone... know if they can manipulate electrical activity, like normal natural electric activity, like lightning and whatnot, and then to their advantage or whatever. And then also, when you were speaking about the tropospheric ducting and that, being a ham operator, we enjoy when those conditions occur because we can communicate with VHF frequencies over a much greater range than normal. Sometimes thousands of miles, where normally we would just have 50 miles or less range.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always exciting to talk to someone on those frequencies that you've never been able to reach before.
Okay, so your first question is, are they able to manipulate electrical storms, etc.?
Yeah, and then the second question is, how do you know if they're manipulating the tropospheric conditions? Because you can't see it, you can't predict it. It just, when it happens, and it's awesome for ham operators. But how would you know what they're doing with those conditions? Go ahead.
Unfortunately, if you find out at all, you may find out decades later. A lot of scientific papers do get published, but there is something of a lag between the time they do the experiment and the time they write up the experiment. I've found a lot of stuff on manipulation of the atmosphere for communication purposes that are up to about 1980. And after 1980, it becomes increasingly difficult to get recent stuff. If you do internet searches, if you do data searches on these things, particularly if you can get into the deep web, you discover that there's a lot of scientific papers out there from between 1950 and 1970 of atmospheric releases of various things to alter the atmosphere in various ways. Barium has been used for decades and was released probably thousands of times between the 50s and the 70s, usually a few pounds here to a few pounds there. And, of course, they assume that a few pounds of barium released at 56 miles up isn't going to harm anybody. But now the soil over North America is beginning to show traces of barium at dangerous levels.
What about the electrical storms?
You know, I did not run into anything. You know, what I spent 7 years digging, and what's in the book is what I found. Uh-huh. What I could actually document. There were lots of rumors and lots of questions, lots of theories, but for the most part, what's in the book is what I could actually prove, what I could actually found the scientific papers to back up, yes, they are doing this.
Okay, Bill, does that answer your question? Well, I guess he's left us.
Yeah. Yep. I had my mute on, so I wouldn't have any.
Yeah. Okay. That answers your question?
Yes, it sure does.
Okay. Did you have another question for Jerry?
That's it for now. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Outstanding. Thanks.
Well, Bill is a neighbor of mine. I'm here in Kempton, Illinois, which is at the worldwide headquarters for Adventures Unlimited Press and the World Explorers Club. And I want to invite the listeners to visit my website, jerryesmith.com, jerryesmith.com. And you'll find a lot more, not just about me, but also about Adventures Unlimited Press and our facilities here in Kempton, and come on down and party with me.
Since you're not far away from Elgin, let me tell you something, Jerry, that you may not be aware of. There are two companies in Elgin that allow this show to be played via the company intercom while the workers are working. They listen to the show while they're working. Their employers allow them to do that. They get it off of 1610 AM and pipe it through the intercom and listen to the show while they work.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. I hope that catches on all across the country. You have mentioned Adventures Unlimited Press, and I think it's an appropriate time for us to tell people where they can go and get this book. And like I said, I've read it three times, and it's just really well written. How can they get the book?
Well, it would do it. There's a lot of ways to get it. It is Adventures Unlimited Press. You can get it at our website, adventuresunlimitedpress.com. You can visit my website, jerryesmith.com, and it will click you over to our website. You could go to Amazon. Amazon is selling it for 30% off, for God's sake. And you can get it at your local bookstore. And that's what would please me the most, is if you go to your local bookstore and order it. And the reason for this is any way you make it, I get the same $1.32. It doesn't matter how you buy it. I get paid the same. But if you buy it at your local bookstore, that will ensure the local bookstore will stock it, that they will have it on stock, and other people looking at will look at the book, and so it will be exposed to more people and will get more sales that way.
Okay, fair enough. Adventures Unlimited, Adventures Unlimited Press or Adventures Unlimited? Yeah, AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com or JerryESmith.com, or go down to your local Barnes and Nobles and or Borders or wherever it is that you shop for books, and ask them for the book. They can get it if they don't have it. And as Jerry said, this helps him because it means they will stock the book then, and more people will have access to it. We are we're kind of up against a break. We have someone holding online, so caller, let me ask you, are you willing to hold through the break?
Yep, no problem.
All right. We'll take that caller as soon as we come back from the break. We're talking about weather warfare and the manipulation of the weather. We'll be back right after this. The telephone number, 1-800-289-1092, toll free throughout North America, just for you.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Jerry E. Smith. We're talking about his book, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And we have a caller holding on the line.
So, Jerry, let's go straight to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Michelle from Quebec again.
Yes.
Yes, Kevin. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Do you think the technology is simple enough that a third person could get it and maybe start a war or use it for terrorist activity against another country or something?
Boy, now, again, it depends entirely on which technology you're talking about. There are some pieces of it that are pretty simple, pretty common, pretty well understood. As to whether you could use it to start a war or not, that's very speculative. That's one of those questions that are, it's a little bit too vague to be answered with any sort of precision.
If I may, just the idea of global warming, and right now we know that Malaysia and Australia are having problems with their fresh water. If you can control rain, you've got a very powerful weapon there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The military have understood the importance of weather in battle since day one, since the very first time they tried to fight a battle in the rain and it didn't work so well, they realized it's a problem. And again, if you can deny your enemy rain, or if you can inundate them with biblical floods, you can force them to do your bidding. Also, if you can, there's a large number of geophysical type possibilities, and to be able to use environmental processes as a weapon is called geophysical warfare. And I mentioned at the beginning of the first hour, Dr. Gordon J.F. McDonald, and he's very famous for having written, the key to geophysical warfare is the identification of environmental instabilities to which the addition of a small amount of energy would release vastly greater amounts of energy. And I give as one example of this earthquakes, that there are half a dozen different ways that human beings have accidentally caused earthquakes, including such things as setting off atom bombs underground. And I point out that if you can accidentally do it the first time, you can intentionally do it the next time. So have been a lot of people looking at how to harness these vast forces by just adding a tiny bit more energy to it to push it over.
All right, Michelle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, basically. Thank you very much. Very interesting show again, Kevin.
Outstanding. Thank you. You know, Tesla was able to cause earthquakes with a little machine he had, and this little machine was about the size of a grapefruit.
Righto. That's several of things that Tesla was working on are pretty well documented, and indeed there's a book out there called Tesla's Earthquake Machine, which includes all the patents and schematics and drawings for it, and explanations on how to build one your own bad self, which I think is a little bit harebrained, but you know that technology is out there, and that, you know, Tesla did it 100 years ago. Now Tesla was working with mechanical. He was working with two different ways of doing this. One was transmission of mechanical energy through the earth, and the other was transmission of electrical energy through the earth.
Yeah.
And I cover both. In some degree, and I have an article coming out in the next issue of Paranoia magazine that covers the electronic side in some depth. It seems as though it's possible. There's been quite a bit of discussion of this. Indeed, the book Weather Warfare begins with a quote from William S. Cohen, United States Secretary of Defense. And Cohen was speaking at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in his official position as the Secretary of Defense. You can take this as an understanding or an official position of the United States government. And in 1997, Cohen said, others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts.
I want to point out, he said, people are doing this, not yes. They will be able to, but they are exactly. Doing it.
Exactly. And so my book is a 400-page examination of, is that right? Is that true? Are they doing this? And there is circumstantial evidence that it's right. There is documentary evidence that various agencies, military, scientific, etc., have explored this technology. The problem is going from a research a paper asking for a paper starting at the beginning of the paper trail, such as a call from a government agency for designs to do X, and down the road 26 years where the X has actually been fielded and used.
Well, based on Cohen's language. And that was during the Clinton administration.
Exactly.
He said, it is happening. There are people who are doing this.
Now, this ties back into several of the things we said earlier. Remember, I said that the United States government was using weather modification as a weapon during the Vietnam War. That because of that, the discovery and the outrage of us doing that led to the UN treaty banning the use of weather as a weapon. And that once that treaty was signed, the United States budget on the subject went from $20 million a year to nothing. And all these projects and government boards dealing with it went, at the federal level, disappeared. Now, that was late 70s. Now, here we have Cohen 20 years later saying this is a real technology. Now, in the military acquisition cycle, from the time it takes a guy at the Pentagon saying, you know, we need a gizmo that does X, to the time there actually is a gizmo that does X in a Marine's hand on a battlefield somewhere, average length of time is 26 years. So we know that for a decade or more, prior to the end of the 70s, that the military were actively exploring this technology. Now, 20 to 30 years later, Cohen says it's real technology. Now, that was 10 years ago. So where is this technology now? And I suspect that it would appear to be pure science fiction if you were to see it on TV.
So we have to be alert and aware, and we have to be informed. And one of the ways to do that is to read this book, folks. It is called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. I will tell you, and we've both agreed to this on the air, it goes farther and broader and deeper than just the military's plan to draft Mother Nature. That's in there, but there's a great deal more. And I recommend that you get this book. I have a few times read books that I needed to read again and again. This is one of them. And it's an eye-opener. You learn something new every time you read it. I pick up something that I'd missed before. We're out of time. Jerry, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, and I hope you'll come and talk to us again.
I'm always a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me. I'll be happy to come back anytime.
Outstanding. All right, folks, we are, as I said, completely out of time. You want to be sure and check in tomorrow and find out who we're going to have on. You know, I don't announce that in advance too often. We get attacked when that happens. And then we have to fend off all of the idiots that are doing the attacks. So in the interest of us all, check in tomorrow and find out who's coming. We've got a great guest coming. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.